We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, friends. This episode of Big Blue Banter is brought to you by Prize Picks. Head on over to Prize Picks and use promo code BANTER and they'll match up to $100 on a new deposit. Thank you and enjoy.
Welcome back. It's the Big Blue Banter, New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier, joined as always my co-host Nick Filato. And today we're rolling forward with more draft profiles. It's going to be another wide receiver. We're going to probably do this position by position. Eventually, we'll get to position previews, but we're getting close on quarterbacks too. So those are probably going to start up maybe next week, I'm thinking. We'll discuss that off the pod, Nick and I, but we're probably going to get to some quarterback profiles starting next week and then eventually move forward with other positions, interviews, and things of that nature. But, you know, today we're talking about a wide receiver prospect that I'm incredibly excited about. And I think Nick is too, based on what I've heard. And we haven't gotten through all the receivers, but this receiver is currently my wide receiver 4. And as far as what I look for in projection to the NFL and ceiling cases, because I'm just really in a lot of ways looking to my whole idea when it comes to valuing prospects. And I know I've discussed this with you, Nick, and I might have even said on the podcast before, it's just like, I'm looking at the projection and then what can happen if they get with the right coaching and the right system and the right team. I'm not really looking all for like things like floor and things of that nature, because my goal is, look, if this prospect hits his ceiling, what am I getting? And or if this other prospect hits the ceiling, what am I getting? And when it comes to A.D. Mitchell, who we're discussing today, Adonai Mitchell from Texas and former Georgia, and then he transferred to Texas. I think from a ceiling standpoint, Nick, he's the closest thing I can find to being right behind the big three. And I know Brian Thomas is ranked higher above them. And I'll start by saying the main difference I see in those two receivers when I watch them, because they are in some ways similar athletes and similar prospects, is A.D. Mitchell's ability to snap off his routes and win on the intermediate middle of the field. It's the in-breaking routes for A.D. Mitchell that really stand out for me versus Brian Thomas. In addition to other things we'll discuss, but in today's NFL, man, that ability to win in the middle of the field is everything. It's freaking everything. The outside, the number stuff, it's fun. We want hole shots. It's great. We want the deep shots, but they're not open and often readily available for NFL teams. But the ability to win with timing and precision in the middle of the field, that's key. And I really do believe that that's what separates him from me above some of the other guys who are like 6'2", you know, 200 plus pounds like Mitchell is, and with an insane athletic profile like he has. So that's kind of where I'm starting with Mitchell. I'm currently have him as my wide receiver 4. Nick, where are you at with Mitchell? I know you haven't gone through all the receivers, but what are your thoughts on him? Maybe you can get into your synopsis as well, or some of what you saw in your scouting profile.
A.D. Mitchell, man, is my wide receiver 4. Wildly smooth player, just a very controlled player as well. Like the combination of size and fluidity, you can see just singular plays, watch him and be like, oh, people of his size, receivers of his size should not be able to move, should not be able to adjust and contort their body in the manner that he does. We saw it in Washington where he's still levitating to catch that football that was thrown up high. The one touchdown catch that he had, that wasn't his best game because Washington shut down Texas's offense. But he had a play against Kool-Aid McKinstry too in the red zone where it was a slide release. And a slide release essentially is you want to move the cornerback, the defensive back, off their platform to open up a slant. So you're sliding. It's a tempoed release. It's a controlled release. You're sliding that defensive back and selling that you're going to go outside. And you're keeping him guessing. And then you just explode inside. And the way, as you said it, he snaps to the inside, stays low, and then just quickly turns and orients to the quarterback. It's so quick. It's so smooth. He had a touchdown against TCU in the second quarter with about 108 left, where he beat the cornerback at the line of scrimmage with his release. And that's one of the things I love about him is he can release. And then he angles his body to the inside, but the throw is to the outside. He's able to just smoothly just transition to the outside, locate the football, and then pluck it out of the air. All natural receiving talent. That's what A.D. Mitchell is. And we'll get into some of the issues with him a little bit later, but he's a natural receiver, and that is so easy to discern when you watch him on tape.
So easy to discern. And that move you're talking about, TCU was one of the games I watched. I love that. The ability to flip his hips and locate that ball in the red zone. It's unbelievable. And like you said, he is a hands catcher. Like from what I've seen, and this is something I like about him, I like his technique and he plucks the ball out of the air with his hands. That's very important to me. But in one thing that you brought up with that TCU play, and I just see this pretty much littered throughout his tape, Kansas, Oklahoma State, and obviously you brought up the game against Alabama, and that's a big one because it's against Kool-Aid McKinstry, who's one of the corners who people believe, you know, could be, you know, one of the better corners in this class, and he had a really good game against Alabama. But one thing that you mentioned, that TCU play, that I see a lot on his tape, dude, is sometimes, like, there are a lot of plays where he wins routes twice. Like, he'll beat the corner with his release off the line of scrimmage, and the corner will be on his heels. Then he'll make another move, and the corner again is put back on his heels after he recovers. Like, you just don't see that very often. His ability to stop and start and accelerate at his size is pretty much unheard of. Not unheard of in the sense that, like, you don't see a lot of receivers, unheard of as far as prospects that aren't elite in the NFL. Like, that's where, like, I saw one person, Brett Coleman, make a comparison to CeeDee Lamb, which I don't see overall because Lamb is so good after the catch. And that's one knock on A.D. Mitchell's game. He is not a good yak player. And there was a time against TCU, or maybe it was the Kansas game, where they kind of had him on a reverse nick. I don't know if you watched the Kansas game, but they put a reverse, and that was the one he went 10 for 141 in a touchdown. So it's like the game I wanted to see because they finally used him as an alpha type, and they ran him on a reverse, and he just did not look good to me after after catching the reverse and trying to, like, create more yak and separation post. He's more of a linear athlete in that sense. I think he can still burst and beat you after the catch if you give him a seam, or if you kind of throw a post to him where he can kind of rip it down the middle, or even just an inbreaker where he has space. But point being, Coleman compared him to Lamb, and I don't see the yak part of the Lamb game, but I see what he's talking about when it comes to Lamb's ability to, like, run the routes like that he runs, and you know what I'm kind of talking about there.
100%. Go to the second quarter, first play of the second quarter against TCU. TCU was one of my favorite games to watch, and he didn't even have like crazy stats, I don't believe, in that game. But you watch this, he was on the field side. You watch this play, right? He releases off the line of scrimmage, clean release, wins easily on a slant. Throw wasn't there. And then he just puts his, I think, inside foot down into the ground and just pivots outward. And there is nobody near him. And the quarterback missed it and oversailed the football. But he created like 5 yards of separation twice on that play. And it's right to your point that you were talking about. Incomplete pass. No one's really going to look at that play and be like, oh, this is me. But when you just watch the tape and you see how smooth he is, CeeDee Lamb does come to my mind. But you're right, man, because that doesn't necessarily translate to yak. And there are also some concerns with A.D. Mitchell when it's just like, if the play's not coming to me.
Well, we talk about that.
Yeah, I think we talked about it on the Schmelke podcast. But, like, that is something that that kind of rubs me the wrong way, just being a somebody who really likes that competitive toughness in a wide receiver.
And it's interesting on that. We can talk about that a little bit now because there's still a lot of pluses I want to talk about with Mitchell that I have in my notes there. Just because to me, this is like a scouting person's dream, like a projection. A fan of projections dream watching him play, because the production hasn't been there. And we'll talk about that as well. Though I think, like, you talked about that TCU game, man, and there are so many red zone routes where I see him getting open and the ball's just not there. Either Ewers is sailing the football or Ewers is just not processing it. Ewers, watching this prospect, Mitchell, had me watching Ewers, obviously, who's a quarterback who, you know, will be in next year's class. And I've discussed as, like, I like his arm talent. There are some throws he makes that are phenomenal. Just crazy arm talent throws. But overall, he is a maddening prospect, Quinn Ewers. Like, his ball placement at times just scattershot as hell, and he just doesn't process the way I want him to process or way I want quarterbacks process. But, you know, as far as just his ability to win routes like that, I think part of the production, the reason the production isn't there is because the quarterback. Like, there's too many times I see him on tape winning his routes with the release off the line of scrimmage, especially in the red zone, which, by the way, Nick, is going to make him just a phenomenal threat immediately for your offense in the red zone. Like, that's what the NFL is about, those one-on-one matchups. And he is just so good in the red zone at creating separation. And something that you mentioned that about him taking off plays, like, that's the only prospect they've seen so far where you're just going to see, like, very questionable effort on plays that are not to his side of the field. Sometimes passing plays, run plays, not what you want from a guy his size. I don't know what the deal with that is. That's like, I leave that to the Giants to interview him and see what they think about him. But I did listen to, and this is shout out to Josh Norris, former Roto World draft guy, and now he's with Underdog. I listened to, he put an interview of him at the Combine. And I got to be honest, Nick, I really liked what he had to say at the Combine, and not just how he sounded coming off as like a really, you know, intense individual, but also like he discussed like, and now this doesn't really excuse the taking off plays that we see like in the run game, and really not, it doesn't really excuse him taking off plays when it wasn't to his half of the field either. But he did say that like some of the reason that you see him not running routes at full speed at times is that he likes to tempo his routes. And that's a big part of his game. I think that's part of what makes him a special player too. Like his ability to tempo his routes and not have to like be running full speed at all times, have that body control and that ability to, you know, sink his hips, get in and out of his breaks. So I wonder, like, it just, I thought his answer was interesting, but I mean, overall, man, there are some plays on film. Like, did you see the TCU game? I'm not the TCU game, the Oklahoma State game.
I believe I did.
The route, and I posted this on Twitter today because Doug Farrar posted this and it reminded me of it, and I look back at my notes. When he runs that vertical stem inside, then cuts outside like 15, 20 yards down the field for the out, and then shoots it back upfield, that's just, for a 6'2", 200-plus pound athlete to be able to do that, it is very hard to operate that double move. It really is. I don't even see a lot of smaller receivers operating that move. That play is like, you watch that play and you're like, this is NFL ready immediately when you watch him. And I think some of the other plays that stood out to me that I wanted to discuss, and I'm looking at.
You're talking about the out and up, right?
The out and up, yes.
Yeah, that was quarter two, 13:03 left. It was a third and 10 play. It was one of the most smooth out and ups in it. And it happened in like two steps, right? Like he went out full body to the out, cornerback reacted, and then he was going vertical right when the cornerback reacted. The cornerback had no chance. He reaches and tries to like grab jersey and he's like, oh no. AD Mitchell's just boom, gone.
Yeah. And look, you're talking about like none of this is too big of a surprise if you look at his profile, Nick. You're talking about one of the best athletes in the history of the combine at the wide receiver position. According to RAS score, he's the 11th best athlete out of 3,063 wide receivers from 1987 on. 6 foot two, a little over 6 foot two, 205 with a 39.5-inch vertical and 11.4 broad, which is one of the best ever. Really, it's 9.96 percentile, a 4.35 40-yard dash, arm length 32 and almost 32.5 inches, 20-yard split, 2.55, 10-yard split, 1.54. I mean, he's got burst and long speed. And really the difference for me between him and some of the other receivers with this profile, this long speed, bursty profile, which is great anyway to have, like a Brian Thomas and other receivers of that ilk, is that ability to sink his hips. Like I have a play that I wrote down that was one of the most simple plays, but to me, I'm trying to find it now. It was a third and three. Okay, this was from the Kansas game. It was a third and three. It was just a little inbreaker he ran, and he didn't really, it wasn't like, didn't go for a big gain, but he makes the catch and then immediately sinks his hips, stops his momentum, and has the ability to then get vertical. There was a tackle after that, but just that ability to make that inbreaking route, first of all, for a player who's over 6 foot two, and then to sink your hips immediately and then have that ability to stop and start. I just don't see it a lot from people who are 6 foot two and above and over 200 pounds. And that to me really excites me about his potential. If he can reach it, of course.
If he can reach it. And also, man, this is why he is drawing the comparison to CeeDee Lamb. And we were saying we wanted to do more comparisons and things of that nature, man. Look, that's the guy who comes to my mind when I watch.
Minus the yak part. The yak part.
I'm talking about size, fluidity. What is this player's ceiling? If we're talking about ceiling, because if you want to do comparisons, if we're going to do comparisons here, we should do ceilings, realistic, and then floor. Sure. His ceiling is CeeDee Lamb. And that is something that I would imagine a lot of NFL teams would roll the dice on, right? Now, there are tons of other variables that we have no answer to. Who is the kid? How is the kid? Is he coachable? Can he learn? All of that. Because at the college level, that doesn't matter as much. Your natural talent can shine. You're not going to get away with that in the NFL. And I'm not saying AD Mitchell is bad in these areas. I don't know. But if you do see him dogging sometimes, at least it's going to draw questions like how coachable is he and all that kind of stuff. And the Giants and whatever team, they can suss that out. Just talking about the pure talent on the football field, though, Dan, there's just not a lot of guys who can move this well.
You're 100% right. There aren't a lot of guys who can move this well. And I didn't get a chance at this size. And I didn't get a chance to see any of his Georgia tape. I'm not sure if you did, Nick. Did you get a chance to watch it? I really just watched Texas.
No, I did not. Okay. I watched Ohio State. I did watch Ohio State.
Yes. So you might have seen what I'm about to say, because I heard this from somebody who has watched pretty much all of his tape, including the Georgia tape. they said that because it's hot, like for either of us or anyone who wants to do this as a hobby, or if you're doing this professionally, if you go check out the game tape, you're going to see what Nick and I are talking about, where the play is not to his side. He looks like he's kind of just not involved or interested in the play. But what I heard was from somebody who followed him at Georgia and watched that tape, that wasn't the case when he was at Georgia. And they think it may have to do with what Texas was allowing from them. And that I will never know. But they think it's possible that the coaching staff is just like, if the play is not to your side, don't waste your energy. I don't know. This seems like a little bit of a stretch to me. But it is interesting that they said when you watch the Georgia tape, and I'm not sure if you saw this in the Ohio State game, but that it just, you don't see it the same way you see it when he's at Texas. And that I'm not sure about. I don't know if you saw it on that tape, or maybe it's something you'd have to watch more of. But you know,
all I know is when I was watching the Georgia tape, and I was fully aware of who the hell Ladd McConkey was. There was a play early in the game where Ladd McConkey gave the DB a little shimmy, exploded to the inside. Next thing I knew, there was like 6 yards of separation. He was like sprinting downfield. And I think that was on an 80 Mitchell catch too, like underneath. And I was like, bro, you could have had this homie like way down the field. That guy is wild with his micro movements. Yeah, he is. And that's Ladd McConkey we're talking about. But 80 Mitchell for a guy his size, micro movements like crazy, head fakes, hips. Where are his hips going? His feet at the line.
That's what makes him so good in the red zone.
It does. And I have down in my negatives, and I should give my synopsis here in a little bit, but I have down in my negatives, like, I didn't know how to phrase it well, because you can watch his tape and come away saying he's a little bit inefficient with his footwork. But I also think that is a part of his route running. I think he does take some extra steps sometimes because he is so big and he is so fluid that he can work into defensive backs' leverage in a manner that looks like he's taking extra steps and you can ding him for it. But I think that might just be how he is. He's a little bit more of a freestyler as a route runner to set up the defensive backs in a manner to which he knows he will be able to take advantage of them. What's going on?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, Big Blue Banter listeners? I'm excited for the football season for several reasons. And one of those reasons is Prize Picks, which is North America's largest independently owned daily fantasy sports platform. And it's so simple to use. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including professionals, sharks, and people who are going to exploit you, you pick more than or less than on 2 to 6 player stat projections, and you just watch the winnings roll in. It's very simple to play and gives you a little extra skin. I set my picks in less than 60 seconds. There are so many stats to choose from, and the withdrawals of funds are easy and quick. Dan and I will be adding a segment to our show before every game where we pick our favorite stats, more or less yards or touchdowns, what have you, and we'll be discussing why from a scheme, matchup, and game theory perspective. I love their promotions and how easy their interface is to operate at Prize Picks. I may select more on tackles for a loss from Bobby Okereke or Kayvon Thibodeau next game. They also do other sports as well. It's a really cool experience. Please join Dan and I in the fun of Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit match up to $100. Again, go to prizepicks.com/banter and use code BANTER for a first deposit matchup to $100. You will not regret it. You ever feel sluggish or out of focus? Are you stressed? Has your digestive system caused discomfort or flatulence like a certain co-host on this podcast during a live stream? If so, you should check out AG1. When I started drinking AG1 daily, I could feel a real difference in my daily health.
I had more energy, I was better off at the gym, and I could focus on my work in a much more efficient manner. That's because AG1 is a foundational nutrition supplement that supports your body's universal needs like gut optimization, stress management, and immune support. Since 2010, AG1 has led the future of foundational nutrition, continuously refining their formula to create a smarter, better way to elevate your baseline health. Not only did I replace my multivitamin with AG1, but I love that every scoop also includes prebiotics, probiotics, and digestive enzymes for gut support. I recommend AG1 to all my family and friends because AG1 has a team of doctors and scientists that formulate around the latest science and maintains high quality standards within the industry. Even my friends have started drinking AG1, and they always tell me how energetic they feel and how it's helped them out at the gym, and also it's helped them manage their stress levels. That's why we're happy to have AG1 as our partner. If you want to take ownership of your health, it starts with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and five free AG1 travel packs when you first subscribe. Go to drinkag1.com/banter. That's drinkag1.com/banter to check it out. Our mental and physical well-being is of the utmost importance. Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all need to take that very seriously. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this episode of the Big Blue Banter podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Whether you're here in New York, New Jersey, Arizona, if you will, or hundreds of other locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/banter to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/banter. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare providers with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment, and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, include EE System.
I agree with that. I think it's part of how he runs his routes. And there's just so many times you'll see it on tape where he's just using I think that's also part of it. It's the sink your hips and the stop and start. That's rare for his size, but also just the feet, the way his feet move. And I've always said, like, and someone made this comp, like his ceiling, you said Lamb, someone said his ceiling was a Davante Adams. And I don't fully see it, but I understand what they're saying. Yeah. As far as like how Adams, one of the reasons Adams has been able to become one of the best receivers in this generation, I think most people would agree with that, is his feet, is how he uses his feet. And I remember hearing Aaron Rodgers, I brought this up before, discuss Jordy Nelson. What made somebody like Jordy Nelson, somebody who no one thought was going to be an NFL receiver, be really one of the most productive receivers during that Rodgers era? And Rodgers always said it was his feet. And I think for receivers, it's insanely important. And I think as far as feet goes, A.D. Mitchell had some of the best feet that I've watched of all these receivers so far. And McConkey's definitely, you know, somebody you could have put up there, maybe better. And yeah. Player, so it's kind of easier for somebody like that to move and to have that kind of footwork. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, we got to get Rex Ryan's input on this though.
Nice, I like that. And I'll be all curious, right, by the way, once we get through it and we haven't done him yet, where McConkey lands for both of us and for me and for you, because he's gonna be up there for me as well. I really like watching this player play, and it's just a crazy receiver class.
Yeah, he's special, man.
He is, man.
And you're right, man. I don't know how to kind of fit a player of his prototype into. Like, I feel like he gets pigeonholed. Oh, he's just like a small slot guy. It's like,
but he can win on the outside.
He's a little bit more than that.
He is.
A little bit more than that.
It reminds me of like a supercharged version in some ways of what I saw from that. And this is not, they're not that similar as prospects, but from what we saw from Charlie Jones last year, because a lot of people were like, he has to play in the slot. He can't play on the outside. And then you get that label, which I'm not sure of. And I know the Giants right now really have a lot of these types of guys. So a lot of people are like, you know, turn their head at it, or like they've drafted. I don't even think they have a lot of these guys anymore, right? It's just kind of just Wandell's left of those guys. So yeah. I don't know if that's even fair to say at this point, because
I think it was just because the Giants invested in a bunch of slot receivers 1 year.
None of them had.
Yeah, and Kadarius Toney ended up getting traded, and the next year they get Paris Campbell, and they bring Paris Campbell in. You have Wandell Robinson, you bring in Jameson Crowder, Cole Beasley, and you just kind of had a lot of guys, and it was like a fun little bit, but there's really no substance to it anymore.
No, not anymore. I think I'm with you on that. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about.
Let me read this synopsis real quick.
Yes, okay? Let's do
not
that
so
first.
Synopsis. Okay. An incredibly fluid and quick-footed mover with excellent route-running capabilities that pose a problem for cornerbacks in one-on-one situations. Mitchell combines crafty route-running, good athletic ability, and physicality with an excellent talent to effortlessly pluck fastballs out of the air. He can win on the vertical plane, over the middle of the field, and create separation both through speed and route-running, while also doing a solid job separating with subtle push-offs and nuance at the top of his break, which is maximized by his explosiveness and his fluidity. He shows a propensity to make highlight reel catches with elite hand-eye coordination, but his consistency in doing so is suboptimal. His tracking in this area can improve. I do love his crafty nature as a route runner and the micro movements up his route stem, but at times, he could be inefficient with his footwork. If you want to fall in love with this tape, watch the TCU and Alabama games from the 2023 season. Much like 2014 and 2020, the wide receiver class is incredibly deep. A.D. Mitchell could have been a respectable wide receiver one in other classes, but the 2024 class provides stiff competition. Still, his combination of size, fluidity, and strength with his unique route running experience at the University of Texas, tons of double moves, will give a team picking later in the first round or possibly early in the second round, which I don't think, a high ceiling X type of receiver who has the makings of being a legitimate wide receiver one in the NFL.
I love that synopsis, and it's really in line. I have in my notes, ball tracking can be improved. I didn't think he tracked the best. I also think he's just a better moving, like I said earlier, vertically than laterally. I don't think he's necessarily a perfect prospect, and I don't think you do either, Nick. There's a lot of concerns, and I'll get to some of the other stuff in a bit, like from a production profile standpoint, because it's definitely there. But I think when it comes to A.D. Mitchell, it's kind of he somewhat fits my planet theory,
just
the planet theory. Yeah, the George Young planet theory, because people who are 6'2" and 200 plus shouldn't be able to stop and start like this. They shouldn't be able to sink their hips like this. They shouldn't be able to move with their feet the way they move. And that gives you an advantage if you reach your ceiling at the next level, because you're facing DBs who aren't going to be able to match up with you physically or athletically. And then you add to that the ability to pluck in the air, which he does a good job of. And I think he could be stronger at the catch point at times, Nick. And I think especially a little bit tougher at the catch point. That can change. But I do like that he's already a hands catcher and he plucks away from his frame. And I feel like his technique is pretty good from a catching standpoint.
So, see, this question's kind of dumb, I think. But, like, I want to do this with a lot of the wide receivers. And it's like, if there's one wide receiver that's outside of the top three that ends up being the best wide receiver, who is that player?
For me, that's this guy easily.
It could be A.D. Mitchell. I mean, there are other players too, but
Amon-Ra St. Brown worked in the NFL. Puka Nacua worked in the NFL. So it could easily be Ladd McConkey. It could easily be Ricky Pearsall from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. But as far as this X receivers go, if you're going to get a true X out of this draft, somebody who can shift cover, because like those guys are great. And I've discussed this before with Amon-Ra St. Brown and with Puka. But like, I don't know necessarily. And you're right that they do to some extent, but it's not the same way where like you're seeing coverages shifted over, like the way the Giants defended Jefferson in that playoff game, Justin Jefferson. Like, I can't totally see that for McConkey at any point personally, but I could see it for A.D. Mitchell if he reaches his ceiling.
It's funny when we talk about this, because the specific offenses that Puka Nacua and Amon-Ra St. Brown play into their skill sets so well.
Yes.
Right. It's not always just like a plug and play type of thing. Like Amon-Ra St. Brown went to a run heavy offense that operates an efficient play action passing attack that plays perfectly into his skill set, because he is so good at finding space over the middle of the field. And he's a damn good receiver, but it's a perfect combination of the player fitting this scheme. That doesn't always happen in the NFL.
Same thing with McVay and Puka Nacua, I think, for 100% the way they
use
him.
Puka too, it's just like a wide zone. Like we always say, like he marries the rushing splits, attack very well.
Yep.
So yes, and Puka Nacua is great with the blocking. He's very similar to Robert Woods from that standpoint, right? And you can just put him in this, and he's very smart, and he's a technically sound, crafty route runner who's not this excellent athlete, but he's just a good football player. And he got put in a position where he's going to start with Cooper Kupp, who's going to dictate coverage, and a wide zone rushing attack that also forces defense to play a certain way and be weary of certain things. And so Puka Nacua gets inserted there and it's perfect, right? But that's not like there's other wide receivers who are very good who just ended up in a situation where they're buried on the depth chart and their coaching staff sucked. that wasn't Puka Nacua, right? He fell into a great role and he seized the day.
He may never had a shot, too. It's the craziest part. Like,
I know, man. And I'm so happy that he's able to do that.
Yeah, me too. And he's a great player. But as far as bringing back to Mitchell for a second, what I'm trying to get to the point is, like, so you said, like, we've talked about some high-end comps of CeeDee Lamb and Davante Adams if he reaches the ceiling. And when it comes to those guys, like, if you line those guys on the boundary of a 3-by-1 set, for example, and those guys could just start killing you in a matchup game. If Davante Adams and Lamb could just start killing you, and Lamb operates from the slot a lot, but those types of players, like what Mitchell could become, could kill you because of how they can get in and out of their breaks, because of their micro movements that you talk about, because of how they can separate and sink their hips and then run those double moves like we saw against Oklahoma State to the outside. And then when that starts to happen, you have a corner who's like 6 foot or 5'11", whatever it is, your best corner, 6'1", maybe even, who doesn't really match up athletically and can't really defend him one-on-one. So now you have to start shifting the safety over and you start playing umbrella coverage. I personally don't see that ever really happening with Puka if you move him to the outside, or even in my mind, like an Amon-Ra St. Brown personally. But if you have a guy like A.D. Mitchell and his athleticism and his ability, then you could start to see that. And it changes the whole game for you. It changes your whole, now you have more space in the middle of the field. You have more space on the other side of the field, because they're shifting safety attention over there. And that's kind of the ceiling I see for a player like A.D. Mitchell. And I'll say this, Nick, from an analytics standpoint, there are good and bad things about his analytic profile. So the bad things we'll start with the bad things first. And this is what a lot of people have: really bad yards per route run, really bad production profile in general, as far as yards after the catch. And, you know, to that, I say this. And this is courtesy of Jacob Gibbs. And this becomes a progression at this point. A.D. Mitchell had a 16.1% off-target rate, which, by the way, you know who else is highest on that list? Xavier Worthy with a 22.4% off-target rate at the college level. Not good. Not good for Quinn Ewers. And it's easy when you watch the tape to see how many misses Quinn Ewers has when A.D. Mitchell is open. So that definitely plays into the production profile. Like, yes, the yards per out run is not good, and the production is not good. And no, and he has to be an outlier now because nobody produces at his level as bad as he produces, and then still, you know, it ends up being good. But when you consider that, the fact that he has one of the highest off-target rates, I consider that his projection. Another thing I consider, Nick, he had only 15 targets that were less than 4 yards downfield. Like, his ADOT, his average depth of target, was super high. They gave him no easy routes. He was, you know, true. They used him a lot on routes that require a higher, you know, I'm trying to look for the word here, make it harder for the quarterback to complete the pass. Like, it's not a lot of easy production for him. I feel like that also impacts his production profile, Nick, and that's something else that I'm considering here. I mean, I think it was, I'm trying to see here. Yeah, he had the 7th highest average depth of target among all wide receivers in college football last year. That means no easy production there, too. So, production profile isn't there, but at the same time, how much of that do I want to, put into, because there's other like stats and analytics that will work in his favor. For example, he dropped only 2.2% of his targets. That was bottom 10 in drop percentage among all wide receivers. And you could see it. He's a hands catcher. And I think that's a good part of his game. Also, there are things to like from just the analytics standpoint, outside of obviously the RAS score, Nick, which is unbelievable. But he was an early declare. He's under 21 from a Power 5 and elite athlete. These are the types of prospects that typically work out in the NFL. And kudos to Josh Norris for that, by the way. And as far as the off-target rate numbers, kudos to Jacob Gibbs from Sportsline and CBS Sports, who got me those numbers as well. And those are from True Media, just to credit everybody there that deserves to be credited. But yeah, man. So I just think when you're looking at it and you're saying like, oh, his production profile, he's going to have to be an outlier. I get that, but there's like context to why he didn't produce in my mind.
And he was also in a Georgia team for 2 years where he spent the second year injured and he saw targets in the first half and then bunch of running plays later, and there was a deep rotation. So like, we know that Georgia doesn't put out wide receivers typically who are getting 1,500 yards. That's not necessarily how their offense has operated.
And I want to make one Bowers, Washington, McConkey, like everybody.
Studs, right? One note too I have here that I wanted to bring up. When he wants to be, he is a willing and functional blocker. I don't think his angles of approach are always excellent, specifically on screens. But I have a couple different plays of note, and I would only put these down when I realize, okay, he is willing, right? Like, I don't just write it down if I'd only see it once. Sure. And then I start marking down when I see, okay, he is willing. This is important for the Giants specifically. I have a play against Oklahoma State, play against Iowa State, play against a couple plays against Kansas State where he was willing and he was pretty functional as a blocker. I don't know what that motor is. That's a big problem for me. And that's a reason why there's a big separation between Udunze and A.D. Mitchell and Neighbors, right? Because like you, for me, I need to see effort all the time.
It's a big question. It's something that they're going to have to ask him. Like,
and it's a rightful question too, because we've seen players come out of college with similar issues and it manifests at the NFL level. And then they're just washed out. Right.
This is the question we'll never have the answer to, Nick. And it goes for every prospect at every position. We don't get to interview them. We don't know what their drive is. And we've always said, if you don't have that competitive drive to be the best at your position or the best you can be, you're not going to make it in the NFL. It's the baseline that in our mind, it's the baseline. And I hope he has that baseline. I don't know. I'm just projecting he will. But I'll say this, Nick, as far as my concerns go, my concern is I think he can be the guy that's like so good for your offense because he can be that X that requires attention and the guy who you can get in these one-on-one matchups that he's going to continue to win, especially in the red zone. And that is borne out, by the way, Ben. This is a courtesy of Dane Brugler. This is a great stat I saw from him. 81.8% of his catches went for a first down or a touchdown in 2023. That was the best in the class. And that's kind of what I see him as, though, Nick. I don't really see him as this, like, he did it against Kansas. He went for 10, 141 and a touchdown. That was the one game he kind of did it for. But I don't necessarily see him as like a CeeDee Lamb, 11 catch a game kind of guy, but I don't necessarily know if I need that. I see him as a guy who's going to win you the money downs, red zone and third downs to get you first downs, win you anytime the defense puts him in a one-on-one matchup, and will win you on the vertical plane occasionally for a big play that changes a game too. But I don't necessarily see his ceiling as like a CeeDee Lamb type as far as volume goes. That's just not where I see him as. That's one of my concerns. And it's not a concern. It's just like a ceiling thing. That's why he wouldn't be in the top three for me or really anywhere close. Another concern I have, Nick, just curious to get your concern on this. 9 forced missed tackles his entire career. Yeah. I don't think he's a great functional athlete as a lateral. Like, I don't think he's great at making defenders miss in the open field.
I agree with that. Yeah. The Yak, I think he only had 187 yards after the catch.
Yep.
I think Neighbors was hovering around 600. Udunze hovering around like 450.
To be fair, Neighbors gets different kind of targets, but it is a good point.
Yes. Yeah. But I think the interest that we have in this player, It doesn't, the yak ability is something I always want for my wide receiver, but where you need, and I think you just alluded to this, Mitchell to win, he wins. And that is not just contested catches, but getting open and creating separation. And there's going to be times too, where he makes catches. Like he had the one catch that we were just going over where it was a double move. The ball was thrown with probably too much touch, right? It lofted in there and A.D. Mitchell ran underneath it and kind of had to slow down a little bit, catch it. And that would have been like an extra 40 yards after the catch that he would have had.
He doesn't get because of the quarterback play.
And he made someone miss. I think it might've been the safety and the cornerback was able to track him down because he was angling away from the safety, but that should have been just a flat out touchdown on that play. So there were that.
He earned a touchdown is what you're saying.
Yeah. But to your point, you are correct. He's not the type of individual who's catching the football and then, okay, I'm going to stutter step. And then the guy falls, like Ricky Pearsall, for instance, who can just make somebody look silly. There's a lot of receivers in this draft class that fall into this. A.D. Mitchell would be more down on that list if we're kind of considering that specific trait through all of the wide receivers who are being talked about in the first two rounds or the first.
Yeah. And you could still get X's that way, by the way. Like this is not a comparison of the player because this player is bigger and stronger, especially just at the catch win and overall, but DK Metcalf is not a huge after the catch kind of make you miss kind of guy. And he's still a true X at a lot of the times you watch that tape and they're shifting coverage toward him. And they're making sure on those third downs and those money downs and the red zone downs that they don't get beat by him. And that to me is the key. Like if you can get a guy on your offense who the defense has to scheme for, this is something we discussed with John Schmelk last night, Nick, like the Giants don't really have that right now, but if you can get that on your team, it gives you such an advantage. It opens up so much space elsewhere on the field, or you can just give him the football sometimes and he can make a play even when he's contested or it looks like he's contested before the snap. And so I'm really excited about this prospect, Nick. I don't necessarily know where or when the Giants would have a chance to draft him. Cause I don't think anyone could possibly look at his tape and be like, we're going to let this guy get out of round one. So I think he's a round one pick almost definitely, unless the off-field stuff is there, Nick, and that then they don't like the interviews. And at that point, the Giants aren't going to take him either. The Giants are going to the team that has stresses, you know, like we talked about, smart, tough, dependable, and how you are off the field. So at that point, if you start to see him slide and he's sliding all the way to 47, my guess is the Giants won't even consider him there. And then they might take a receiver in round one anyways. It might not matter. But my guess is the Giants won't even consider him at that point, and something will be off about him. As far as the NFL, you know, their evaluation of him. But as far as I don't think that'll be the case from listening to him at the combine, just my personal evaluation of how he spoke at the combine. And then, you know, I see him going around one. But You never know. Maybe the Giants could trade back. That's something we haven't discussed a lot this draft season, Nick, but it's still a possibility.
Like
if McCarthy's sliding and it's like, oh, we see Harrison go and it's like Joe Alt and Harrison are 4 or 5 and Vikings offer like an insane deal to the Giants. Like let's say the fight that happens. The Vikings are like, we'll give you these both these first round picks and next year's one. It's like an insane offer the Giants could consider. They get 11, 23, and a one next year. At that point,
you like, take that.
I might have to just pass on a Dunze or neighbors, a Dunze or neighbors, and just be like, F it. I'll take what I get at 11. Maybe it's an AD Mitchell at that point. Maybe it is. Maybe that's the guy I take.
Maybe it's a top cornerback.
Maybe it's a top corner. And then you go to 23, and maybe Mitchell's still on the board, or maybe you have another receiver you like on the board there. And now you also have next year's one. Like, at that point, like if they get that offer from Minnesota, I'm probably leaning toward that over neighbors or Dunze. But that's another time for another podcast. We can do a whole podcast on first round scenarios, trade up, trade down. I think we should do a podcast on it as it gets closer.
Definitely,
Nick. But
definitely.
For now, we can put a cap on that. Thanks again for everybody listening to the Big Blue Banter podcast. Keep it locked and loaded. More profiles to come, more draft talk to come, more interviews and guests and analysis. Have a great rest of your weekend. Please like, please subscribe. I should be asking at the beginning of the videos, but we really need your help on that front. Like if you're watching this video and you haven't hit like button yet, just click that like button. Please click that like button and subscribe as well if you haven't done that. Thank you and have a good one.